From Boston to Hawaii, Community Health Center served over 31 million patients last year. How are they keeping pace with their success while always working to improve the quality of the care?
You want to have a portfolio that has, you know, innovations and improvement on your core business, but you also want to be thinking about what are some game changers or transformative things that you could do. And so when you think about a 3 to 5 year plan, you want to have a lot of things that are going to make you better, stronger, healthier, but you also want to have a couple items that are kind of swinging for the fences types of stuff.
Community Health Best Practices is a network of 17 of the nation's leading community health centers. Their ideas and optimism are bringing innovation to the entire sector. This is Conversations on Healthcare.
Well, welcome to Conversations on Healthcare. Margaret and I recently had the opportunity to moderate a discussion at the Community Health Best Practices Forum, which is a terrific conference for learning how community health centers effectively provide comprehensive primary care and behavioral health services to all patients, regardless of their ability to pay.
The panel members all serve as CEOs of their organizations. Let's list them. They are Gloria Amador from Salud Integral en la Montaña in Puerto Rico, Eddie Chan with Northeast Medical Services in San Francisco, Nieves Gomez with Columbia Basin Health Association in Connell, Washington, Ann Kaufman Nolan with Sun River Health in New York City, Long Island, and the Hudson Valley, and Greg Wilmot with East Boston Neighborhood Health Center.
We started by asking them how COVID had changed their nonprofits.
My aha moment was that we have so many heroes amongst us. When nobody knew what was happening with COVID, we had our providers at the front line.
Yeah.
You know, you didn't know how it was transmitted even at the time, mm-hmm. you know, doing the testing and, you know, making sure patients were okay. I have so many pictures that I keep going back to look at, just to see our providers standing there. And, you know, we didn't have all the, you know, with garbage bags, yeah. We didn't have all the stuff yet because, you know, your masks, we're doing all these weird things with masks, right? And trying to clean them somehow and send them to the state, and the state would clean them and give them back to you, but they had lipstick on it, so you know it wasn't yours. And you know, so it was really hard, right? But to have our providers and our MAs and our clinical staff going out there day after day, not knowing
right.
if they're going to survive.
Yeah.
Right. So that was my aha moment.
I was leading parts of the directly the vaccine effort, leading that charge. And so I have all my text messages of all the stuff I was doing. So I'm still on my phone. I'll scroll through it every once in a while just to relive some of the trauma of all those, all that work. But one of the things that was really interesting to me, so on the back end of all of the work on the vaccine, and this was a team effort, community effort, but in Massachusetts, the communities that had the highest rates of vaccination amongst the Latinx community were East Boston, Revere, and Chelsea. Now, those are just, you know, neighborhoods, I think, that some of you may not be familiar with. Those were the communities in Massachusetts that we stood up yeah. vaccine centers
mm-hmm. yeah.
and partnered with great intention to bring vaccine to the Latinx community. And that when those were the vaccine centers, but we did a focused, strategic, intentional effort with the goal of how do we reach a, you know, close the gap on vaccine rates. So the aha moment in that, when we saw the data and saw the relationship between the work that we set out to do, the strategy that we set in motion, and the intentionality of it was, if we bring intentionality, data, and strategy to an issue, we can actually close the gap and address the issue. And I think the aha for me in that is the same level of urgency and intentionality to which we approached vaccine rates for COVID-19. I'm bringing that same focus in partnership with my fellow colleagues and leaders at the health center to to each issue that we see that we know to be problems in our communities. And I think that's what is possible. And that's the, you know, so for me, that we got that in us. We can actually close these gaps and deliver on some of these outcomes. It just requires that focus, intentionality, and strategic intention.
Sort of maybe sort of walk under the process of how you think about your role around as a strategic leader for your staffs and for your board, and as you apply that over the next couple of years.
Being ready to face any other emergency is very important for us. While everybody shut down, we stay open. We never close a minute our operations in our 7 centers. We never shut down our emergency room, even I was receiving 12 patients per day, because that's the engagement you have. That's a message you send to your community that you're here on the bad and in the good. And that's takes us to establish new infrastructure to face new challenges on environment or hurricanes or other things, like new warehouses. Now we're thinking on buying a gas station, because we spent like $300,000 in diesel in the last emergency. We are looking into establishing other businesses that can support what we do. And the most important thing is trying to make our employees understand that we are always behind them, that when they have a necessity, we're gonna be there, stand for them. I don't know if it happens to you, but we lose a lot of employees during COVID. And now generations have changed. Yeah. Payment types have changed. Salaries have grown a lot. So we have to make changes also to make sure we have the best benefits and salaries for our employees so they stay with us and we can grow together. That's the only way you can tell your community that when everybody leaves you, we are here and we stand here for you. We keep providing our services, and people feel the same way. We increased 7,000 patients on the 2020. Like when everybody lose lives, as a managed care system, we increase in lives. So our strategy has been in reinforcing more infrastructure for preparedness. And for our employees also knows that we're going to be backing them.
It has to belong to our strategic plan right now, whether we like it or not. And I'll take the perspective of, recruitment of providers. Right now, you know, traditional urgent cares, our providers right now are being burnt out in primary care because of being a patient-centered medical home and being responsible for the totality of the patient. Right. Right, that's the feedback that I'm getting from my providers more and more and more and more. And I always say, and this is to not offend anyone because I include myself as in comparison to you all who have a lot more experience than I do even in administration. But I often find myself saying they don't make them the same anymore. And by that I mean you can't bear as much. You know, we can't endure as much as new generation right now. And that's what I'm seeing in new grads and recruits that we have right now. They come into the primary care system and they're tapping out. They're saying, I can't do this anymore. Especially when there is that unique combination of the 90th percentile in terms of productivity with access, and then be responsible for quality and everything else. Mm-hmm. And so you look at that and say, well, what's happening right now? And it's this reset post COVID-19 of that generation that's coming in when we kind of slow down as a health system in general, universally. And so, you know, we're in that dynamic where we have to talk strategy about how do we save our system from losing providers, because that's what's happening right now. And they're moving over to urgent care models where they don't, you know, really have to follow the patient. They just do what I need today. They could do good work and they do a quick note and they're done. There's no administration, or I heard say before, there's probably not a large inbox, right, for the medical provider. And so there's an attraction there. Mm-hmm. Being as rural as we are, I didn't feel challenged by that very much. But it just caught up to us later, after everyone else. Mm-hmm. But it caught up to us. And so that's a conundrum that we're working with right now, is really addressing that. And we've moved, in terms of our strategy in recent years, to have a co-located sort of express care.
Yeah.
We have found that that is necessary to try to separate somewhat the acute from the more chronic, for lack of a better word, more of the preventative type of appointment as well, and not combine so much the schedules that way to overburden our providers. So I think from that perspective, you know, we should be having those conversations about, is the strategy co-located care with urgent care, express care, however we define that, with, you know, a PCMH model in primary care. You know, is that the first step as we bring them in? Certainly, we need to provide the access, and we do that the best, I believe. But we also need to take care of the whole self of the patient, and so that's our responsibility. So, and I know that's where you guys are moving. So maybe you have a little more on that.
Great, Greg. So I'll speak more process than kind of specific strategies. But on, you know, how I think about process, you need a strategic planning process, and you have to think about the outcome of that process as being a tool, a dynamic tool, not just, if you create a strategic plan like a glorified paperweight. And so from a process standpoint, what I try to do with the, you know, not going through the actual process itself, but my goal in going through strategic planning as an organization is to have a set of priorities that are generally understood across the organization. So you have to define that, because there's so much that we're wading through as organizations. There's a lot before us that we're trying to solve. How do you prioritize that? And how do you think about directing the resources of the organization toward the issues that need to be addressed? And so we create a strategic plan, and that strategic plan has some structured priorities. Within the plan, what I try to do with strategic plans I've done, and I mentioned I've kind of worked in strategy for a long while, professionally as a strategist, in my capacity with for the state of Massachusetts specifically, and have continued to kind of lead that way, is you want to have a portfolio that has, you know, innovations and improvement on your core business, but you also want to be thinking about what are some game changers or transformative things that you could do. And so when you think about a 3 to 5 year plan, you want to have a lot of things that are going to make you better, stronger, healthier, but you also want to have a couple items that are kind of swinging for the fences types of stuff. And so I try to have a portfolio that has that mix, because you can have these opportunities where you have a game-changing initiative that is going to get you further upstream or really affect the very issues that you're trying to, that you're there to solve, right? So we're in the business of healthcare, so you have a lot of work on just how do we become a better healthcare provider, but also, you know, how do you get to a place where you are not having to deal with some of these issues? How do you get upstream and get at some of the social determinants of health more deeply? So we're doing a lot, just in terms of an example, around food and thinking about the impact of nutrition equity on the health of our community. But I think that's how I think about just processes. Do I have, and I that's what I think about all the time,
yeah.
Do I have the right mix of projects in our portfolio that are going to make us healthier and stronger? And do I have some game-changing initiatives mixed in there as well?
We set about achieving a North Star and established the North Star as a value-based care system that focused on value, on the quality of our patient care, on the lifting a new model of care where we were supported by a new model of payment. And that lifting has been a challenge for the last couple years, because lifting a change when the change has not really occurred universally, and where you have a large percentage of the population uninsured, the only way you can do it is to concentrate on those value-based care contracts in place to make enough money to be able to handle the rest of the population in a universal system. And so that has been our single focus, our North Star, with the centerpiece being our quintuple aim, and wrapped around it, important are the access measures. How are we achieving better access? How are we working on sustainability in terms of the hotspots? Are patients living in the hottest places, in the flooded communities, in the highest need communities? How are we serving and initiating a sustainability program that reaches enough information to our clinicians to help in identifying and educating our patients about water, where can you get relief from hotspots? So there's a sustainability aspect to all of this. There's an advocacy aspect that has to envelop, and I thought more and more as we sat here in this session these last few days, that the more advocacy we put together and raise with community health centers being at the forefront of all of this work, it is such a collaborative process. It could be augmented by all of us. And that's another area that we have strongly taken on in our own organization. In fact, we provide, it would seem to me, if the three New York centers joined together, we would be much better leaders, more aggressive leadership than what we currently have in the state. We need not to compromise and be homogenous by the middle, but to reach for our North Star, all of our North Star, really, is to move it. So I think those are our challenges.
This is for anyone. How are you managing across an incredibly multi-generational workforce as you move into the future, still growing, still expanding your services?
You know, what we're seeing is that there are different needs in our workforce, and whether that is being flexible with our workforce and providing remote opportunities, whether that is getting creative, as we learned yesterday, about creating different shifts or different schedules, whether that's pay, that's accelerated a ton, you know, over the last several years. It's looking at every opportunity to really keep the workforce. And I think the key word is really engagement. Yeah. Regardless of how you deliver on that, it's engagement. We've been asked lately, you know, how is CBHA winning Modern Healthcare Best Places to Work, you know, 4 or 5 years in a row? And we made a decision to really engage at that level and introduce technology that allowed us to feel like we were communicating often, as you guys have seen. And that's really worked for us. We made a decision to only measure on not just the top box combined, but just the excellent scores, and really decided to be transparent as leaders and open sort of this feedback loop of, you know, what's the workforce expectation?
Yeah.
And how do we meet that? And how do we get creative around that? We dedicated resources for not just community engagement, but employee engagement. And then we decided to not be so uptight and serious as an executive team, even though that's maybe natural to us, but to allow our workforce to see us in a different environment, whether that is, you know, dance videos to music of the 80s and 90s. And that's non-negotiable. Everybody has to do that, you know, on our team. And so just really bringing that sort of culture and fun environment, and it is our responsibility as executive leaders to really foster the culture that we want to see.
Eddie, any?
I would say we really struggle with that.
Yeah.
I come from a very old school, you know, type of mentality. And, you know, for me, you know, back in the day when you went to work, you just went to work, and whatever people give you hell, you just take it, right? You can't do that anymore, right? You just can't do that anymore. And you know, we've been struggling, and we've been taking all the tidbits that we've been getting from best practices. We stole some things from you guys. We stole some things from PMS, and I think that's helped, and it's all around engagement. We've also, you know, bumped up salaries quite a bit. And because of a combination of things, I would say that our overall staff or workforce has been relatively steady over the post-pandemic. You know, the whole thing around California and its minimum wage for healthcare workers are now at $25 an hour. We actually went way above that. We're at 30, you know, from the janitors down. Wow. Everyone's above that amount. And so I think the pay helps. The benefits are one of the best in the Bay Area. And so I think that piece of it, plus some of the communication things that we've learned from best practices, I think has helped. I know in the past we were always struggling to get our positions filled. You know, we have a couple of hundred outstanding positions in the past. Now we're in, you know, double digits. I don't know what it is now, Paul, but
62.
So a lot better, right? And so I think overall we've learned a lot from you guys, and I thank you all. It's helped us a lot. I don't know what the next iteration is going to be, right? Mm-hmm. And there's so much we can do as employers to provide, you know, all these various things from, you know, monthly, thank you, you've been doing a great job, you know, put a little gold star on you this month, and there's only so much you can do, right? And and it seems like my kids, you know, you got to recognize them all the time. Oh, you did a great job. These guys are 35, right? And you know, we're still doing it, and so I think we're going to have to continue a little bit more. But I really don't know the answer to this.
Yeah. What about the other end of the spectrum, maybe the people who are thinking about retiring, but you're hoping to keep them in the workforce for a few more years? What kind of flexibility are you creating for people?
So I know we have some physicians that have wanted to retire. And, Dr. Tai is always coming up with ideas. And we have them working from home now. And they see their panel of patients. It's all 100%. Telemed for them, and they just stay at home. They don't have to come in. So we're testing that out. Mm-hmm. But you know, you're going to have to come in eventually. You know, your patients have to come in eventually, right? And so that's kind of what we're running into. Even though they're at home 100% of the time, it still takes other providers to help fill in the void.
Mm-hmm. Anyone else?
I think one thing that we've done a good job of over the years, and credit to, I think, just the organization's commitment to maintaining a certain culture, is we outlined a set of values to which we all hold each other accountable for. Those values center around respect, teamwork, diversity, innovation, essentially. And so we communicate those regularly. Everyone that comes into the organization goes through an orientation where those values are strongly conveyed and communicated. I've started a process of coming to every one of our new hire orientations, and I talk about who we are as an institution, who I am as the leader of the organization. And I think that's kind of the thread that ties everyone together, is that that shared purpose that we have to serve members of our community with distinction alongside those core values. And I think a lot of the other pieces are challenging, as you know, Eddie was touching on. There's just so many unique needs that, whether generational or cultural or other kind of just ways that people present to the workplace, you just want to create a culture that's inclusive and respectful.
Great. Gloria?
Just a comment. We are going to be 50 years in October. Ooh. We still have employees who started the company that probably will be retiring afterwards. But establishing a way for them to feel safe that they're going to be prepared for retirement is important. The 401k or any other help you give to your employees, profit sharings, whatever. The other thing we have is we have five generations working together. So in our leaders retreat, we do talk a lot about this theme, how we can work together without being disrespectful to the other generation. How we can join forces with your knowledge in technology, with my knowledge in how to run this operation.
I have to credit our executive team and the work that they're doing in clinical. It really comes down to an assessment, market assessment of salaries, and we've got a union in part of the organization. So regionally, we're out the Hudson Valley and Long Island and New York City. Long Island has the union. And so we have various compensation barriers that presents and challenge. It's really challenging, but we've done a pretty good job in that. But that's what we're working with right now in market assessments, trying to pull people up and making sure we don't have anybody that's dragging at the bottom, that we're not leaving anybody behind in terms of a living wage. We went early in New York. We were there before New York Well, that was at $15, and you know we're raising to 20. We don't have anybody below 20, but we have our eye on California, and I think we're keeping pace with that. New York will follow California everywhere. We hope they put in place virtual care and other regulations that are and funding of physicians and residency training programs as you do in California. But I think trying to model that, really using other places as our model and learning from all of you has been very helpful as we look forward to how to retain. I learned a lot from the discussion around what the residents want.
As the fun side of this, what would one do with an unanticipated gift? I'm the incoming chair of the National School-Based Health Alliance, about a $3 million operation. We open the mail, we've got a $9 million check from Mackenzie Scott that got delivered unrequested, unsolicited. Fundraising could possibly reshape your future in some ways. What are you doing in that area that's moving that ball forward?
Yeah, Columbia and Health got the same surprise. And so we got $7.5 million from Mackenzie Scott.
No way.
Recently. And at first I was skeptical because I didn't know much about it. And so I asked a lot of questions and I said, what's the criteria? They said, well, you have to provide access, quality, and looks of the CEO. So I know why we got it now. No, I think it's important. It's a blessing, you know, to work with organizations, to be recognized based on the work that we do. You know, I remember a time where, you know, grants made up, you know, less than 10% of our revenues. And now, during COVID, especially post-COVID, you know, we're really relying on the money just because of all the change that has happened. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so we prefer not to. Obviously, we want to be able to generate that. But certainly, every opportunity that comes out, we explore it a lot more today than we used to in the past. And we've built teams around that, too, in order to manage that, because there's a lot of requirements that come with that. So certainly, the last thing I'll say is that, you know, when we're looking for that type of money and support, we're looking for non-restrictive money. Yeah. And luckily, the Mackenzie Scott is one of those, and we'll be looking to use that to build a new access and a health center in a new community for us and compete for that.
That's great. Eddie, have you opened your mail?
I open it all the time once I heard that, and nothing yet. So for us, we've never fundraised at all in my entire career. I don't know how to do it. I have no knowledge of how you all do it. So that's definitely something we're going to have to figure out. But that's never been a requirement of my job to fundraise, although it may change in the future. So I look forward to getting all your input to how to get some money. And if you know Mackenzie Scott, can you give her a good word?
It was a great conversation, and we appreciated everyone for participating.
Thank you to our audience for being here. Be sure to subscribe to our videos on YouTube. Find us on Facebook and X with our account name, CHC Radio. And as always, go online to chcradio.com to sign up for email updates. And remember, you can also share your thoughts and comments about this program. This copyrighted program is produced by Conversations on Healthcare and cannot be reproduced or retransmitted in whole or in part without the express written consent from Community Health Center, Inc. The views expressed by guests are their own, and they do not necessarily reflect the opinion of Conversations on Healthcare or its affiliated entities.